Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Great show lined up for you. I know I always say that, but I really mean it. And I'm really pleased. We keep lining up. We, meaning Beth Moodhart in my office, keeps lining up wonderful guests for us. And I'm very excited to have Ron Lieber on the line with me. He is a personal financial columnist for the New York Times, and he's written the book, The Opposite of Spoiled, Raising Kids Who Are Grounded, Generous, and Smart About Money. The website, ronlieber.com, LIEBER is how you spell that when you do the website, ronlieber.com. And Ron comes to us with, of course, the New York Times as part of his background. And before coming to the Times, he's wrote the Green Thumb column for the Wall Street Journal's Money and Investment section. He's well-regarded in the investment community and journal industry as well. Fortune and Fast Company magazines, been on the staff there. His first book was Taking Time Off, Inspiring Stories of Students Who Enjoyed Successful Breaks from College and How You Can Plan Your Own. And he's also written the book Upstart Startups, a book for young entrepreneurs. And he is a graduate from Francis W. Park in Chicago. How's that, Ron? Is that a good start?
That's a great start.
Well, thank you for being on the program. And I know I could spend the next 30 minutes talking about your background, but I know that my listeners are very interested in hearing about your latest endeavor with The Opposite of Spoiled. And I must confess, I'm very interested myself because I have a 10, 11, and 13-year-old, and I'm trying to strike that balance between taking good care of them, but also keeping them grounded and, you know, preparing them for this world that we live in. And, you know, finances are a big part of it.
Indeed. You know, the reason I wrote this book was because I felt like things had actually changed pretty fundamentally just in the last 10 or 15 years. We have 16 and 17-year-olds making six-figure decisions about college. I mean, this is lunacy, right? That college is that expensive in the first place, and that we have mere children making decisions about how many tens of thousands of dollars they could potentially go into to buy this college education. But it's the world that we live in. We need to make our kids ready, and that means a decade or more of preparation to get them ready.
Okay, so I still have time. That's perfect. So I've got a decade to work with, Ron. So I want to prepare them as best I can. What are some of the places we should start? I can start with your book. Where do I start with starting to give them that understanding? Is it for my 10, 11, and 13-year-old, is it too soon to share things with them about, you know, how much income we have coming into our household, how much things cost?
Sure. I mean, I think it's never too soon. And I also think that it's never too late. You know, you have age-appropriate conversations at the moment when they are necessary with kids where you can talk to them on their level. And I'm sure you found that your three kids are all different from one another in important ways. But if you're a parent of a younger child and you really want to kind of get started at just the right moment, I often find that introducing allowance is a great thing to do right after the tooth fairy comes for the first time.
Okay.
Because kids have all of a sudden awoken to the possibilities of money. You know, maybe they get a dollar, or maybe they get $5. In some communities, I've heard of kids getting a $100 bill when they lose their first tooth. Whatever it is that they get, they are going to want more money once they have a little bit of it, because they're going to get a taste of what it is they might be able to afford, and then they're going to be looking for ways to acquire more. And, you know, allowance turns out to be a great tool for learning, allowances for practice, and there are all sorts of things that we can do with it to help kids get smarter.
That's excellent, Ron. So we get the allowance, and the allowance, of course, also includes doing some things around the house, I hope. At least that's always been my thought. And then once they have that, then do we encourage them to kind of plan with that money a little bit? You know, give a certain amount to give, certain amount to spend, a certain amount to save?
Sure. So we can divide that into two questions, right? What do we expect them to do for the allowance, and what do we expect them to do with the allowance? As for the for part, the age-old question is, do they have to do chores in exchange for the money? You are with the vast majority of families who think that the two should be connected. I am with the minority of families that think that chores are something that kids should do without the expectation of compensation. because chores are just what you do as a contributing member of the household.
Okay.
Now, parents are worried about leverage at that point, or are we teaching them a work ethic? And that's all fine and good, but my feeling about that is that if we want to punish kids who are doing a lousy job of completing their chores, and we should, then we should take away valuable privileges and not impose financial penalties, where money starts to be connected with fines and negativity. I think allowance should be for practice.
Okay, I like that. That makes sense. Well, we have in our household, we have a very powerful tool that I'm sure a lot of other parents invoke, and that is bring me your technology.
That's right. I mean, that seems to be the things that most kids like doing the most, or it's the privilege, at least, that exacts the most power if you threaten to revoke it. So that's a perfectly fine thing to take away if the chores are not being done. And then the allowance can just exist off on its own as a tool for learning. And it becomes a tool for learning when we get to the with part of the occasion. What do we expect them to do with the money? And I suggest that people divide the money into three jars. Some families do four, some families do two. But you know, the basic idea is that you want some money for now, you want some money for later, perhaps you want some money to give away to people who need it more than you do. And maybe you want some money to invest too. I mean, I'm talking to a financial planner here, so we got to include that. So maybe
sure.
It's four jars, right?
Sure.
But the spend money is for now, discretionary purchases, mad money, fun things at the dime store, and it allows kids to buy things on impulse and then see how they felt about the impulsiveness later on. With save, that's for short to medium term goals. It allows them to see the money pile up in a visceral sense, through the transparent jar that they keep it in. They can count. It's a good math lesson. They watch it grow. It's great. The give money allows them to support causes of their choosing. Maybe you're a family that gives regularly in the collection plate to church, or you give tzedakah, temple, or through other religious traditions. That's all well and good, but it's also nice for kids to be able to pick out things that they alone care about, maybe more than the rest of the members of the family, and have a little bit of money that allows them to support that cause. It makes them feel really good, particularly if you can give them the opportunity to give that money away in person, at the zoo or at the park headquarters or at their school. The development people will often make a huge deal out of kids who are walking in, and it's an addictive feeling for them, that feeling of being rewarded and being able to give out loud in front of others.
I like it. Makes a lot of sense. And there's a lot of life lessons there. What are you seeing? And I know this is kind of maybe tough to come up with an average, but what kind of allowance do we see parents giving to, kids in their teens? And again, I'm thinking, okay, what's an appropriate level? Is it age-based? Is it based on, I don't know, what factors do you use to come up with a weekly allowance? What kind of dollar range, I guess, are you seeing often? And then is it adjusted based on age?
Yeah, I think with the younger kids, it almost doesn't matter. You don't want to give them so much that they can get everything that they want. But most families aren't in danger of doing that. I think that it becomes a more interesting question later when you have to ask yourself, okay, well, what is the allowance for? Because as kids get older, they may have larger needs or more expensive needs that relate to their extracurricular activities or their clothing budget, because the clothes get more expensive as the kids get larger, right? And so you can start to experiment. You can take it from a weekly allowance to maybe a allowance based on school year and summer. And in the school year, you turn over their entire clothing budget to them at once. You sit down, you figure out what it is that you're willing to buy for them. Maybe you're willing to outfit them in clothes that come from Target in that price range. Or maybe you're an Land's End or an L.L. Bean family and you're there, or maybe you're an H&M family, or maybe you're a Nordstrom family. It depends on how much money you have, but you set the budget according to that, and then you let them make the trade-offs. And if they want the really fancy underwear from, Victoria's Secret, they can have it, but they're probably going to be buying their blue jeans at Target, because you're not going to give them enough to get everything that they want. We want to set them up for trade-offs, for budgeting, for thinking hard about what it is that they want the most, what it is that means the most to them.
That's good, Ron. That sounds like the title of your next book, Underwear from Vicky's and Jeans from Walmart.
Right. Or, the reverse could be true, right? If if athletic pursuits are what's most important to you, then you're going to want the, you know, the very best sneakers, and maybe you won't care so much about what you're wearing, you know, underneath your blue jeans, right? So you can get your Walmart underwear and be just fine with that.
Whatever it takes, right? Whatever it takes. All right. So it, just to wrap up on the allowance, so if we set it for, let's just say $10 a week, would that be out in left field, or is that kind of the dollar range you're seeing some parents do?
No, I think that you may also make a different allocation decision depending on your values, right? So you may say to kids, well, we really want you to be giving, $3 of those $10 away in the form of charity, and we may want you to save $4. So really, you only have $3 a week to spend.
I see.
And those $4, maybe those dollars have to go to college. And so, you know, you're never going to touch that money. So, you know, much depends on what kind of rules you set. And, you know, I don't think anyone should feel like once they hand the money over, they're no longer parents and they can't make the rules. Quite the contrary. I mean, the banned items list still applies. You know, if it's the pierced navel, or if it's the cropped midriff, or it's the toy gun, or if it's, you know, the noisy video games, whatever it is, those rules still apply. They don't get waived once the money is in the three jars. So you still have a fair bit of control.
Okay. Makes sense to me. Ron Lieber is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. The website, ronlieber.com, LIEBER.com. The book is The Opposite of Spoiled, Raising the Kids Who Are Grounded, Generous, and Smart About Money. And we're going to grab a quick break. We'll be right back with Ron. Stay right there.
When it comes to finding an advisor you can trust, are you unsure of the questions to ask? David Holland has written a book that can help, and it's called How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. David has crammed his experience and insider knowledge about advisors and how they operate into this popular book. Visit Amazon.com to order your copy today. Or if you'd like to meet one-on-one with David to discuss your financial goals and concerns, he'll give you a free copy of his book when you meet. There's no cost or obligation. The number to call for your appointment with David is 671-PLAN, or visit planstronger.com.
And we are back. Ron Lieber on the line, ladies and gentlemen, and we're talking about his book, The Opposite of Spoiled, Raising Kids Who Are Grounded, Generous, and Smart About Money, which is a wonderful thing. We talked a little bit about allowance and, setting expectations and all of that. And we also started to touch on, Ron, which I think is another great subject for us to talk a little bit about, and that is about college savings. You know, my kids know, we've talked about it, that we are, you know, we are as a family savings for their college. But I love the idea that you could have that, maybe that jar that's for saving, it could be earmarked for college so that they know that they're taking a portion each week toward that, and they know that that's a sacrifice, and in the current moment that they don't get to spend because they really need to save and help to contribute part of what we give them, that they know has to go toward that.
Sure. I think it's a great thing to do. And, you know, one alternative there, right, instead of having them save, you know, $4 a week, which, you know, may not amount to much, although it'll amount to something over, you know, 6 or 8 years, is you might sit down with them at the age of, 13 or 14 and say, look, we want to tell you something here. College is going to be really expensive. Maybe you have more than one kid. There is a lot that you're going to have to pay for, and your family may not be able to do it all. And even if your family can do it all, it's probably a good idea to give the kids some skin in the game, make them
right.
feel responsible for it, because they'll probably get a lot more out of it and take it more seriously if it's their money on the line. And so you can say, look, you are going to have to pay for the first semester of college tuition. Maybe not room and board, but college tuition yourself. That'll be a sizable four-figure number, maybe even five-figure if you're going to a private school. But it is within reach for most kids who work each summer between the end of ninth grade and the beginning of college. And so, you know, that could be the deal. You want to go up to Gainesville, you want to have that experience of being a Gator, you are going to have to set the money aside. Otherwise, it's, you know, community college for you for the first 2 years, because we're just not going to have enough money.
Well, that that puts a fine point on it, and it does make it to where they do have that skin in the game, as you said, and why not get them more involved in seeing the actual, and I like the idea of seeing the accumulation, and maybe it's a, let's look at the money in the jar, and then, you know, as they get a little older, and let's look at the investment statement that where we've been putting the money, if it's a 529, or if it's a, you know, prepaid, or if it's an actual brokerage account. That's what we do, because I need that flexibility. that they can see that statement and they can get a sense for how much really is going, you know, going in and really needs to be saved. And it just makes it real. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's a, you know, it's important to let them in on the actual numbers. So it's, you know, it's a good conversation to have as early as possible, right? I mean, this is a large sum of money. It's one of the biggest financial decisions that the parents and the kids will ever make in their lives. No reason to shield them from the reality of that or from contributing to what it's going to take to make it happen.
Sounds good. And so how about this? How about the expectation for once kids, you know, they get into the where they can actually work either during high school or college? What are your thoughts on that, Ron? What kind of expectations should we set for kids in those areas?
I think every kid should work. I think it's important to have a boss who doesn't care a lick about you, who is not going to cut you slack, who is not your parent, for whom there is no excuses, and who might fire you if you don't do the work in a satisfactory way. I think it's a great lesson for kids, you know, to have to report to somebody. And, you know, it's a good thing to do before they have their first full-time job. And, you know, the earlier the better as far as I'm concerned. You know, some parents work. Some parents worry about, you know, kids choosing after-school jobs over extracurricular activities. I don't actually have a problem with that. There is no rule at, you know, competitive colleges that you may be applying to that extracurricular activities have to be in the school. If you do an amazing job for your employer, or if you end up inventing your own business or a product or a service that you can sell, that's the kind of passionate pursuit of excellence and things that you care deeply about that college admissions officers care about. And you know what? Team captains and stars of, you know, the high school theater productions, those people are a dime a dozen, but not a lot of kids really work hard anymore at paid jobs. And so if you're doing that, you may actually stand out.
Yeah, I mean, that's a family value. That's a core value that certainly would say, look, here's what I did when I was coming along, and we had this GPA, but I also did this work, and here's what it is. And by the way, I've got a reference from my employment for 2 or 3 years or whatever it was when they went to school. And it just, I think I like the idea because it definitely builds some strong character. Now, what about when they get into college, balancing the coursework, the course load, with also working as they are going to school?
Well, there's a lot of good research out there on that, and the general sense is that if you are not working more than 15 or so hours a week, your coursework will not suffer. I mean, you know, kids spend a lot of time wasting time, and what ends up happening is that the time that you spend working for money, that doesn't necessarily get traded off with less hours in the library, as long as it's not more than 15 or so hours a week.
Yeah, you're being kind and generous on that, Ron. I know exactly what you mean. It's you're trading time partying for working, or time, you know, hanging out with friends to work, not necessarily the crunch time for studies. And you know, that it does give a good balance, I think. And you know, I remember when I went to college, you know, back forever ago it seems now, but I did actual tutoring, which was kind of convenient because I got paid to teach a subject that I was taking myself. And I was the accounting tutor, and it just was, it was like you said, it was probably about 15 to 20 hours a week. It helped to pay bills. It took a little pressure off, so I had some discretionary spending, and it allowed me to also be in the field that I was in.
Exactly. I mean, not only did it reinforce some of the concepts that you already know, but, you know, the idea of having to explain complicated things to people who may not understand it. I mean, certainly it's a great skill for a budding financial planner to learn. But, you know, communication skills in general and helping people and mentoring people, you know, and future employers, you know, want to see that you are able to do things like that. And, you know, so it's, you know, it's hard to argue with the merits of that kind of employment.
It didn't hurt when it came time to interview, I can tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're just joining us, Ron Lieber's on the line with us. The book is The Opposite of Spoiled, Raising Kids Who Are Grounded, Generous, and Smart About Their Money. We'll grab a quick break. We'll be right back with Ron.
Since 1997, David Holland has built a solid reputation in our local community as an independent financial advisor. Just as important, Holland Financial's professional team has grown to include 3 experienced certified financial planners, a tax accountant, an attorney, three chartered financial consultants, accredited asset management specialist, and certified annuity specialist. Our attentive and professional staff gives prompt and accurate service to our 300-plus clients. If you're looking for financial advice you can count on today and for many years to come, call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
Ron Lieber, ladies and gentlemen, husband, dad, New York Times money columnist, author, and the book, The Opposite of Spoiled, Raising Kids Who Are Grounded, Generous, and Smart About Their Money. And that's what we all hope for. And Ron, it's not just, now we'll kind of shift gears here, it's not all about the money, even though that big part of it, we've spent a lot of time talking about it. It's also, there's the time element. And one of the things I know that you talk about is ways of making giving, and it's not just the cash, but also time, making that a family activity. So what are some good ideas or ways to do that?
Sure. Well, it begins with the allowance where you divide their money into jars and, the kids have a give jar and they can make some of their own decisions. But I think eventually you want to bring the kids in on the charity discussion as a family. Presumably you or your spouse, if you have one, has some kind of a charitable budget, and maybe you give it all to your church or house of worship, or maybe you divide it among, 10 or 20 different causes. But my feeling about that is, why not share that with your kids? Because that list and that list of numbers that goes with it is a pretty good reflection of who you stand for. And if you don't like the way that list works, then it's time to sort of reallocate your charitable resources. And kids, even as young as 8, we've done this with our daughter. We didn't use the real numbers. We just put 100 beans on a table and we divided them up according to the percentages. So, for every $100 we have to give away, $17 of them goes to cure river blindness. It's a devastating disease, and a little bit of money can actually save a life. And so we put a lot of money towards that. And then there's the alma maters of mine, my various schools that all gave me financial aid when my family fell on hard times. We spend money there generously because we feel like it's our obligation to give that money back. And then some, so that the next kid like me who comes along can also get a scholarship. And so we walk them through those things. And we did it with my daughter. And she asked all sorts of penetrating questions about why we did what we did and who was more deserving and who was less and who really needed the money and which charitable donations just felt like something nice to do but not essential.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. I like that approach. And then on the other side, which is really more of like the volunteering, what are some thoughts there in terms of getting the kids involved and maybe even having them participate? Because, maybe the money part's important, but also, and again, I've heard about this third hand, and I know it's coming down the line for me with the service hours and the kids having a certain amount of time they need to spend in volunteer activities. So is there a way to tie that into creating the opposite of spoiled?
Right. Well, one of the hardest things to do for kids who have more than average, who are lucky enough to have more than what they need, is to give them real perspective on what it's like to have less without, being sort of voyeuristic or having your nose pressed up against the glass of somebody else's misfortune. You don't want to be that person. And so, what we hope to do is have the sort of volunteer experiences that allow kids to develop real relationships with the people that they're helping. Okay. That tends to be most meaningful, for the people who are doing the work, and that's often most meaningful for the people who receive it, to know that there are people who are coming back again and again trying to be of service, who will throw the rope back repeatedly and try and kind of pull them along. And so, those are the kinds of volunteer experiences that I think are the best ones to look for.
That's excellent. I like that, Ron. And then the final thing I wanted to make sure we got to is the world we live in, of course, is very materialistic. And how can we, let me back up. When does a child kind of tip over into that materialism, and what can we do about it? I mean, we see that. What are some of the signs, and how can we kind of correct for that if we maybe haven't done the best job of protecting against that as the child's developing?
Sure. I think the most prominent sign is when kids begin to value their things, their possessions, their stuff over people and relationships and real human conversations. And, you know, that can be a real issue in the age of ever more expensive and involved, video game systems and ever more expensive clothing made for younger and younger kids. And, you know, you can become obsessed with these things in a way that can make you much more focused on material things than you are on the actual human beings and some of the experiences that can, you know, bring you the most joy. And so if you see that happening, it's probably time, to restrict access to the things that are, you know, causing these kids to become that much more obsessed.
Okay.
And to focus more on the real human relationships they have. One thing that can be particularly effective here is household gratitude rituals, where, you know, you remind kids about kind of just how much they have and how good they have it, and ask them, on a regular basis to sort of talk about that. Oftentimes, that leads them to think more about the people in their lives as opposed to being repeatedly thankful for whoever it is that invented the PlayStation.
Well, yeah, that PlayStation, it's a magnet. In fact, back to our comments earlier about, you know, restricting or even, getting their attention, if you will, by taking away. I have threatened to toss the PlayStation into the front yard a few times. So it's a central part of our house that they like that PlayStation. All three of them get on it at the same time. We got the extra remote and they're all into it. But so restricting that, you know, creating the time for family, good old fashioned board games and that those personal contacts, creating the opportunity just to sit and talk as a family.
Yep, exactly. I mean, you know, those are the best kinds of things.
Well, that's what we all hope for, and I applaud what you're doing, Ron. I think it's great. I'm excited. There are several books, of course, that we've mentioned earlier that Ron has written, and the latest is The Opposite of Spoiled, Raising Kids Who Are Grounded, Generous, and Smart About Their Money. And you can also go to the website, ronlieber.com, LIEBER.com. And of course, you can also check out the column, Your Money Columnist for the New York Times. And you can get on there, Ron's site, check all that out. And I tell you, Ron, I appreciate what you're doing, and it's great stuff. And any final thoughts before I let you go?
No, I just encourage people to think about the connections between talking about money and teaching kids values. I think they are there for us every day, and it's a good idea to make that link.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and I will apply your advice myself and look forward to sitting down with the kids and talking about money. All right. We thank you very much for your time.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.